This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards are actually worth the annual fee and which just look shiny, how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships, when to book peak season trips without paying peak season prices, and more. So travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Today, we're sitting down with Dave Grossman, founder of Miles Talk and Your Best Credit Cards, to dive deep into the world of premium luxury credit cards, the ones with the eye-popping perks, sky-high annual fees, and, if you use them right, game-changing travel benefits. From the brand new Citi Strata Elite to the Refresh Chase Sapphire Reserve and Sapphire Business, we'll unpack which perks are actually worth paying for, how to know if a card fits your travel style, and when it's smarter to skip it altogether. You'll learn how to maximize the value of these cards, avoid the traps that cost people money, and build them into a point strategy that works for you in your life.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. My name is DeAndre Koch. We have a fantastic guest ready for all of you all today. But before we introduce him, a couple of quick reminders. As always, all of these episodes are fully aired on YouTube, so you can find them in their full video version there. As well as for those listening on YouTube, don't forget every single Friday we release our weekly Quick Hits, which are our quick travel points and miles news and information coming right at you. And that's only in the audio only version. And also don't forget, we do have our newer video channel on YouTube, Boldly Go Travels, which is more vlog style. We do release the audios of those from time to time in the regular podcast. But if you actually want to see visually the drone footage, the shots of our travels, those type of things, we have those there as well. Now on to our fantastic guest today. We have Dave Grossman, the founder and CEO of Miles Talk and Your Best Credit Cards, with us today. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Dave. So we're going to unpack a lot of really great things today. I know our lens, our focus is really on all of these elite cards coming out, these ultra premium luxury credit cards, and talking through pros and cons and the benefits and really who are they most benefiting nowadays, especially with a lot of the changes. But before we get into all of that, would love to get some background on yourself. So for the listeners who may not know of you yet, who may not have heard of Miles Talk or Your Best Credit Cards, can you share a bit about your background, how you got into Points and Miles, and how you ended up building out these businesses?
Yeah, sure. I've been doing Points and Miles for about 20 years, which is crazy to say. All started with a love of travel and not a lot of money at the time, and reading Flyer Talk obsessively and just kind of learning how I might be able to travel more without spending as much money. After a good bit of obsession with that and my first business class trip, which was just a simple, you know, using United Miles, I had stockpiled for years and years and years. I was like, this is really cool. Got more into Flyer Talk. And then there was a mistake rate. It was a hotel in Bora Bora, and it was a Starwood hotel. And they, instead of $1,000 a night, it was $100 a night. And so this is, I mean, given this is in the early 2000s, you know, this would probably be a $2,000 night hotel now. And so I booked 10 nights and I told my girlfriend at the time, like, hey, we're going to Bora Bora. And she's like, how do we get there? I'm like, I have no idea. And then the next day I got an email that they canceled the rate, but they were giving me star points. And I was like, I don't even know what star points are, but okay. And then I just started kind of deep diving into star points. For those that don't know, the program of the former Star Preferred Guest that got sadly swallowed up by Marriott and ruined. And basically, I learned enough to get a stay at the Le Méridien in Monte Carlo in a butler suite using points, because Starwood had quite a sweet spot where you could, if it was a category four, which was 10,000 points a night, you could spend 11,500 and get upgraded to a junior suite. And this was pretty much like a real suite. And the value, I think, was about 1,600 euros a night for, you know, 11, so we're talking 12 cents a point, something like that. And I was like, wow, okay, this is incredible. And then read more, learned more. And, you know, that was when I first was kind of like the, you know, getting these comments from my friends like, hey, you're always flying around the world in business class and you're always staying at these five-star hotels. And how are you so rich? Like, when did you become rich? And I'm like, it's still the same. Like, I'm just using these points and miles. And it sort of evolved into a full-time passion. I created my first travel business was actually an online travel agency called Hotel Magician. And that was in the late 2000s. And the only reason that that's interesting is that it completely flopped as a travel agency, had almost no bookings, but I actually wrote a blog on that site and had credit card links from all the major issuers. And this was at a time when you could actually have direct links with all the issuers without any volume worries or anything. There was a lot of compliance, but not volume. And that was how I made money on the website. And that rode for a few years until the issuers did start to have volume requirements and lost all those links, and then took a bit of a pause before resurfacing in 2016 when somebody at South by Southwest, and I don't remember who they were, and I wish I did at this point because of the way it sort of transformed my career trajectory, but they asked me to speak at South by Southwest. And I was like, okay, I mean, that's super cool. And the session was very well attended. It was actually oversubscribed. People didn't want to leave after. And everyone was like, where's your blog? Where's your blog? And I don't have one. And they're like, well, why not? So I wrote a blog like on my personal domain for a little bit. And then I was like, okay, it'd be cool if I had a domain. Found Miles Talk available. Some other people had bought it and then let it go because they thought it sounded like Miles Stock. And I was like, okay, I don't care. I'm just going to capitalize the T. And then nobody ever really says that, like maybe once every couple of years. So that started as the blog and then the Facebook group, which is now about 47,000 members. And then 2019 is when I started Your Best Credit Cards, because the concept there was I wanted to expand the business and create an automated Dave. And the real short one on that is just people kept asking me, what card should I get? And I kept saying, it depends. And every conversation would be a half hour and be trying to extract, what do you spend on? What do you care about? So we developed that, and then we relaunched the end of 2022 with what we call Your Best Credit Cards 2.0, which is a super amazing platform I won't dive into now, but it is a culmination sort of my passion of credit cards as a way to feed the rewards points and Miles Talk with that as sort of a full circle ecosystem of cards and education on using the points and math.
Awesome. So I think you absolutely set the stage for your background, right? Like, you haven't just been doing this for a few months or for a year. You've been in the game a very long time. So you've seen the iteration of the cards, the loyalty programs, status rewards, these type of things. And that's why I thought you would be a perfect candidate for this conversation, because the world of premium cards has completely evolved compared to what it was 10 years ago. And it's really easy now, especially as we talk on the podcast and episodes about the welcome offers and sign-up bonuses, all these different things, and you know, Amex Platinum or Business Platinum offering us, you know, 250,000 Amex, you know, membership rewards points every other month. Like, it can be easily to get caught up in all this, like we were talking about off air. But the fact that you've built a community, you've built a business around your expertise in the points and miles space is really a solidifying fact to say, hey, we've got a subject matter expert here who can talk through these various cards.
I sure hope so, Matt.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, that's going to be our transition point, because we've seen this wave of premium car launches and a lot of updates. And so my question, kind of just to start more broadly, is what's your overall take on where the luxury car market stands right now? What do you think?
Personally, I think it's starting to get very saturated in an interesting way. Well, to take a step back, it's not like the Chase Sapphire Reserve invented the luxury car market, right? We had Amex Platinum before that. Didn't have the same kind of attention on it, but it was there. Amex Platinum back then was really more like a, you know, drop that on your date and have the date be like, oh, this dude's rich. And that I think has gone away a little bit. I think there's still some perception of that in some circles. Obviously, if you're in the points and miles community, you don't blink an eye at a platinum card. Now, if someone drops a black card, if you're really into points and miles, you're like, dude, that card doesn't earn very well.
Oh, snap, for a lot of reasons, including that. Yes.
You're like, oh, snap, you're rich, but also why are you putting this meal on it for 1x points? So obviously, I mean, that's still, you know, a very luxurious card for those that want it, but it's luxurious really more for its status than anything else. So I have an article on Miles Talk it's one of my personal favorites. It's not one that's monetized very well, but it's the history of the Citi Thank You program. And it goes back into the mid-2010s and the launch of Thank You. There were cards before the Citi Prestige, like the Citi Chairman card. And then we wound up with the Prestige, which obviously is a fan favorite. And, you know, as we talked today about the launch of the Citi Strata Elite, and it looks like Citi Prestige card holders like myself will not be product changed, which is fabulous because we love our Prestige card. So they were doing the Chairman card and that in the late 2010s. And so you had the Amex Platinum, you had Citi with the 4A. And then what was interesting was how the Chase Sapphire Reserve changed everything. They came out with that 100,000 point offer, and they came out with a card that screamed, I am on it. I have money. I'm not flaunting that money audaciously. And I think the reason it landed so hard, or so well, I should say, is even though not profitable to Chase, but why it landed so well from a consumer standpoint and an adoption standpoint was the simplicity, right? Like, there was something really awesome about 3X on travel and 3X on dining. And you had the really nice priority pass and your net annual fee, because it was $450 at the time, you were paying $150 for a card with great travel protections, primary car rental coverage, and your priority pass. And so it was very easy to be like, hey, it's $150 out the door, basically, for all of those perks. And if you're a heavy spender, 3X on travel and dining, like, you're hitting a lot of sweet spots there. And it made it very easy for people to be like, you got to get the reserve, you got to get the reserve, you got to get the reserve. And people did, right? And then that 100,000 point offer was the icing on the cake. So with that said, I think that was what made it such a success. And at the same time, Chase was losing money on it. So eventually, obviously, they hit the $550 annual fee. They backed off it during COVID, but then they went ahead after the brunt of COVID. And now when you look at, you know, obviously, people do refer to the Amex Platinum and now some other Amex cards as coupon books, which I don't think is an unfair characterization at all. And now we have the relaunch of the Reserve, and we've seen the fee go from $450, $550 to now $795. At a time where, by the way, the Amex Platinum at $695 is said to be going up to $895 later this year. And even I am getting a bit of fatigue from the annual fee hikes. I guess you could say, hey, you know, and someone in finance like yourself certainly gets, like, money supply over the last 5 years and inflation over the last 5 years is actually not crazy that it's doing this. It's kind of almost just catching up, but very hard numbers to swallow. I mean, to think about a $900 annual fee on a credit card is a little bit crazy. So I think that both of these cards now work for different people, and it depends on the benefits that each card provides. And then I am geeky enough to have worksheets on how you can put all the benefits in and your personal value, right? Because $120 pre-check credit once every 4 years, if you have 9 cards of pre-check, it's worth nothing to you. If it's your only card, then I guess it's worth 120 divided by 4. But you got to put your own value on everything. And then, is there a card that's a clear winner? Like, you don't have to have a premium card if the math doesn't work for you anymore. You could go into a slightly less premium Venture X and still have lounge access. And not to get too far ahead of us, but, you know, the Venture X right now, so we're in July 2025. We were fresh off a couple months ago hearing that now you were going to have to pay for an authorized you to have lounge access. But if you think about the economics of the Venture X, it's $395 with a $300 statement credit. Granted, it's in the portal. Probably people like you and me don't prefer portal credits, but you can get your $300 back. I recommend car rentals for that when possible. You know, and then your 10,000 annual points, I don't think it's going to keep up even as good as it is right now. The reason they had to change allowance access was obviously the card could not be profitable like that. So even paying for your additional lounge user, if you're not using all of the statement credits on the reserve and the platinum, it's probably your cheapest lounge access, and the Capital One lounges keep getting better and better. So just to put that out there, because I think the general blogger consensus was, oh, they ruined the Venture X. And they didn't ruin the Venture X. The Venture X was just way too cheap. So you've got all of these choices now. And it's like most people do want a card with lounge access, but which one works for you? So I'm sure we'll get into all of the credits and everything. But the point is that I think that in order to make these cards profitable, the issuers needed to look for other businesses that were willing to subsidize credits in order to get business, right? Like nobody thinks that Amex is paying $100 to Saks Fifth Avenue for that credit, right? That's being funded by Saks. And so they've changed the way that they come at these cards to make them profitable. But then it's up to us, like, you know, a lot of people will brag, like, oh, I just used my Saks credit. Would you have ever even stepped foot in Saks? Do you care at all about anything sold by Saks? Right? If the answer is no, then like, okay, great. You got your $50 for the half year, which probably took more than $50 in lost time on your business or whatever else you could have been doing. I mean, that's where I want to make the point, is that they've gotten a little bit complicated. And so if you're going to have to work too hard at it, then it might not be worth it.
And do you know, Dave, and I'm probably sure that you actually probably don't know this directly, but would you assume that for the non-in-the-weeds points and miles user, right, because most of us, we track that we're getting every single penny of value we can out of each card, each coupon, each reward, each everything. So we're insane in that space. But for the average person...
We're the outliers.
Exactly. For the average person, do you think most of them are actually taking advantage of all these premium perks?
No way. I think that the average person is using a handful of the perks. I think that a lot of people are probably net negative on these cards, right? Like if you look at the Amex Platinum, the only bonus multiplier is the 5x on flights booked directly. Yes, you get 5x on hotels booked through Amex Travel, but now everybody is offering, you know, when we get into the new Strata Elite, 12x if you use the portal. So from that perspective, it's got one bonus category. You don't want to use it for dining. If we get real deep in the weeds, obviously we talk about having an Amex Gold for your dining and earning 4x. But if we're just looking at the Platinum alone, there's not a lot of value in the bonus categories. And then the people need to pay attention, right? They need to use their Uber Cash every month. They need to use that airline fee credit, which we know how to use a little bit easier than the average person who's really only using it on seat assignments and luggage and stuff like that. You know, do they look at that digital entertainment credit and figure out like, oh yeah, I have Hulu or whatever, so I'm going to get my $240 back there. I think for the average person, it's got to be pretty set and forget. And so, you know, if they use Uber anyway, right, they'll use the Uber Cash without thinking about it. They set up that $240 a year, you know, $20 a month entertainment credit. So I think that if they look at it one time and they go, yeah, I'm going to use these four things, and these four things are worth more than the annual fee, and then I get Centurion lounge access and Delta lounge access, I'm flying Delta, this is a good card for me, right? And it's more than just plinking down that metal card, then it makes sense. But I also think that for the average person, the $200 in annual airline fee credits, I think people like you and I consider cash, but a lot of people don't use them, right? So that's the in the weeds thing is, yeah, I think these have gotten more profitable for the issuers than they were, both because we have merchants funding the credits, and then we have breakage on the credit.
Got it. Great explanation. I would agree with you. I think it's the same that unless you're the analytical person that's going to say, whether you're in points and miles or not, but you're going to say, hey, I know I'm paying this fee, I need to extrapolate value out of it. A lot of people are probably wasting them, or they have the airline credit fee and they're assuming it can be used for an upgrade to first class or business class or whatever it may be, or for buying their plane tickets, and they're not getting it. And some of them may not even realize they're not getting it. They just assume that they did already use it.
That's the sad thing, right? Like they'll pay it assuming they're getting a refund and they never check for the credit.
Exactly. Well, let's move on, Dave, because you've been toying around a little bit, or teasing, I should say, the City Strata Elite card. And as this recording, because we're at the very end of July here, this card just came out. So this is all brand new information. With just at a high level, what's your gut reaction to this card? Of course, we're going to drill down on some of the benefits and such. You already mentioned the 12X on hotels when booked through their portal. But high level, what's your gut reaction to this card?
My gut reaction is that I think they took an interesting tact on it. And I guess what I mean by that is I think that it's very appealing to one type of customer and very unappealing to another type of customer. I think that they took a very interesting tact of very, very heavily bonusing their own travel portal, which I will say they did just upgrade, I believe, a week ago. It's fully powered by Agoda, and it is a better experience than it used to be. However, points and miles people don't like using portals. You know, quick aside, I was at a Bilt event a couple years ago. We're not going to talk too much about the Bilt card, although they are planning to offer a $495 luxury card. They are going to be the first major issuer. I mean, they're transitioning to cardless. They're going to be offering a full portal experience. Things eventually, it will take time to get there 100%, if they ever get 100%, but you'll be able to do direct bookings through them. So you can book, say, a United flight, and then you can go to United and call them up and they'll manage the flight. Same thing with hotels. There'll be direct bookings, including member rates, but nobody else is doing that, right? So when you're booking through the City portal, it's a third-party booking. And even though it's Agoda, you're going to get there and they'll be like, oh, you're on an Expedia rate, right? So you're not going to get your benefits. You know, I'm a Hyatt Globalist fanatic. You know, I don't stay so many nights in a hotel that I can have nights where I'm not earning my elite nights. I need them. I don't want to be put in the basement room because I booked third party. But then there are other people that don't care. However, I do wonder where the intersection is of the people that are going to pay $595 for an annual fee card and also are not savvy in terms of caring about that. Right. So that's the interesting thing. If you don't care, so for everyone, 12 times points on hotel, car rentals, and attractions, 6 times points on airfare, but you have to book through the portal. And then even one of the statement credits, $300, but it's a 2-night hotel stay booked through the portal. So everything's through the portal. And what I find interesting is that there's no fallback. Something that I really liked when Chase reintroduced the Sapphire Reserve was that they said, hey, 8 times points through the portal. Huge, 8 times points. But you don't want to book through the portal? That's cool. This is a premium card. We're going to give you 4X to book airfare and hotels directly. So that's still a huge multiplier. But City is not doing any multiplier if you don't book through the portal. You're just going to get the default rate, which, okay, it's 1.5x instead of 1 for all other purchases. But so you're only going to get 1.5x if you book directly using that card. It's a very interesting way to go.
Well, what benefits of the City Strata Elite really stand out to you as the most compelling? Because we just named that, okay, we can do all these things through the portal, but are there certain things that you say, well, yes, it is the portal, but this is actually kind of valuable. It did actually grab my attention a little bit as an example.
Absolutely. So it's a great call out. There's another audience that's going to be enamored by this card. People that fly American Airlines or care a lot about American Airlines, because they did, with the release of this card, as you know, launch transfers to American Airlines Advantage Program, which has been a long-awaited thing in the journey of City and American Airlines. They've had the co-brand relationship for forever. They did do during COVID. There was a very short period where you could transfer thank you points to Advantage and people loved that. And then that expired. Side note, my guess on that is they had a stockpile of miles because people weren't traveling during COVID. And so they were like, hey, we can offload this and also see what the uptake is on this. No inside info, just my guess. So you know, people have been clamoring for that. And so they launched that along with this card comes with 4 annual Admirals Club passes. So to buy a day pass at Admirals Club is $79. And so quick math on that, $316 a year if you use the 4 passes and if you were going to buy them anyway, or if you would consider buying them anyway. So that's real value. That said, the $95 City Premier card, City Strata Premier, also will transfer to American Airlines. So the BIP there is really the passes to the Admirals.
Yeah, I think it's pretty incredible because I have the City Strata Premier card that the release of this card allows all of us in the thank you points world to be able to transfer it to American. I mean, I guess that's maybe, I don't know, Cindy's technology, whatever it may be. But as someone who is an American loyalist, I earn a lot of American miles in general. I don't really plan to use my Citi thank you points to transfer to American between my fiance and I with our earning rate. However, the fact that I don't need the most prestigious card to be able to do that is pretty huge.
Yeah, no, I thought that was interesting because I thought that they were going to limit it to the Strata Elite for transfers to American. And maybe they felt like that was going to gate it too much. So they limited it to their annual fee products, right? So Citi Prestige still gets transfers and Strata Elite and the Strata Premier. So it's interesting because it makes it less necessary to have the Elite, but it also rewards Citi card members paying an annual fee. And I don't know if you saw, I saw this yesterday, and I'm going to give a hat tip to my friends at Frequent Miler. They discovered that they've actually released transfers on all of the Citi cards now, not to American Airlines, and at reduced rates. Honestly, doesn't make a ton of sense to do the transfers. But I thought that that was very interesting also. And I also thought it was interesting that Citi really didn't, like, I didn't hear from their PR team about it. It's very, very low key. I get PR stuff from them pretty regularly. And nothing about the American Airlines transfers, nothing about the other cards being opened up to transfers. So maybe they just figured this was going to speak for itself and everybody's going to share. But until I saw the Frequent Miler post, I didn't know about the other cards being unlocked with the transfers. Obviously, then they have the technology to control this very well by card, by ratio. So obviously, the advantage thing was very intentional because that's the only thing that the other cards don't get even at a reduced rate.
Hey, everyone. Quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode. So Dave, before we go and move on to the Chase world of things with their new refresh line of the reserve cards, in just kind of a summation, who do you think should consider adding this to their wallet and who shouldn't? And before you answer that, I'm going to kind of let you know some of my thoughts when I come think about myself. I'm not actually super interested in this card on its own, but it is appealing to have a new opportunity to get a bunch of new Citi thank you points. And with me having the Strata Premier, and I've actually turned my Citi card into one of my daily drivers, seeing as I earn Amex and Chase points pretty easily at this stage, so to kind of have a little more of an eclectic point system, I could see myself getting this card more so for the sign-up bonus, use it, get the coupon value out of a year, and then look at downgrading it in the future. But I'm kind of insane in the points and miles world and analytical. Who do you think should consider having this? Do you think that makes sense, my mindset, and who probably shouldn't?
You know, if you're eligible, 100,000 points is very sweet. It's also worth noting for any of your listeners or clients that aren't aware, but if you have a Citi Gold relationship, you get $145 off the annual fee. If you actually have a private client relationship with them, which is $1 million tier of assets, then you get your first year completely free with the Strata Elite. So you save your $595 and then the $145 ongoing. And also worth noting that, you know, Citi Gold is $200,000, and that can just be, you know, a mutual fund or some stocks sitting there. A lot of times people are like, I'm not going to have that kind of cash just sitting with that. I mean, you don't have to like move a little money from a brokerage or move some equities from a brokerage account. So if you had this card and you were going to keep it ongoing, right? Citi Gold also comes with a $200 annual credit. You can use that towards Hulu or Amazon Prime, Costco. And you get a $200 relationship credit annually with Citi Gold. So if you add this card also, $345 plus better service at Citi, And, you know, if it's just moving equities from, say, Vanguard or Fidelity or something to do it, I do think that's worth it. Okay, let's also mention there is this City Nights, right? 6x points on dining on Friday nights and Saturday nights from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. Eastern time. It's a very interesting thing to do. I think it's a little complicated, to be honest, that you have to remember it's a Friday or a Saturday night. And then if you're traveling, check the time zone. And it is based on when they first authorized the card. But if you're on the West Coast, it starts at 3 p.m., which I guess is kind of cool because you're probably not dining between 3 a.m. and 6. You're not losing anything. But I think if you eat out every Friday and Saturday night, and you're going to use this every time, like 6x points is pretty sweet. So give that, you know, a little bit edge because you have to be someone that's dining out a lot on Friday and Saturday nights. They're not business expenses, right? If you're putting on your personal card. That's a type of person, like maybe if you have City Gold, you spend a ton of money on dining on the weekends, get your 6x. And then if you're the type that will use the Blacklane credit, $100 every 6 months, then that's another $200 off than your $300 hotel credit. I mean, you can come out ahead on this, but I think ultimately it really comes down to, are you going to book through the portal? If you're happy to book through the portal, this is a really, really powerful earning card. But if you're going to flat out refuse to use the portal for everyday booking, maybe you're going to use it for the hotel credit only, even for 12x, you're like, no, I want my hotel benefits. Then I think the $95 Premier card is stronger with all the 3x bonus categories.
Perfect summation. Well, Dave, moving on from the Citi ecosystem into Chase, right? They made a bunch of updates to the Sapphire Reserve. They created the Sapphire Business as well. We don't have to unpack all of the nuances of all of them. I actually already recorded a couple episodes or quick hits where I broke down all the new changes and all the different things. So listeners can go listen to those if they really want the breakdown, or honestly, a quick Google search can break those down. But my question for you, Dave, are what are some of the most meaningful changes, good or bad, to these cards? And really, I know for the Reserve, it's a change, and the Business Reserve is a creation. But what would you say?
I think one thing to really keep in mind between the two cards, and I thought this was a little interesting, they did this. So they kept the 3x points on dining on the personal card. But on the business card, I would have loved to have seen the 3x points on dining. You know, I tend to now use an Amex Business Gold for all of my business dining expenses to get 4x. But if I could get 3x with Chase, I'd probably prefer that. But instead, they made 3x on the online advertising, specifically for social media sites and search engines. Now, that's super powerful. By the way, for business owners, there are some business owners I know that spend in the millions a year on that, right? Because they're profitable on whatever they're spending. And you're going to get 3x on that. It's uncapped. The fact that it's uncapped, when you look at the 150K caps on Inc. Preferred and on the Business Gold, your 50K cap on the Amex Blue Business Plus and Blue Business Cash, that's huge. But why didn't they give the 3x points on dining also? And you know, obviously, the numbers weren't going to work for Chase that way. But I was a little disappointed with that. On the personal side, moving from a 550 annual fee to a 795 annual fee, so you have another 245 to recoup. And by the way, one thing we didn't mention on the City card. So the Priority Pass comes with 2 guests, but it no longer has access to the Priority Pass dining like the Prestige did. They don't have their own lounge network. So when we're comparing to Capital One with their growing lounge network, Chase with their growing lounge network, and Amex, of course, with this, I believe there's over 30 Centurion lounges. So that's another thing we should call out about the Strata Elite, is that you're only going to have the Priority Pass lounge access with that. Chase, you know, I've been in some of their lounges. I think they're doing a good job with their lounges, and you do get 2 guests. So that's a nice perk of the card, where keep in mind, with the Amex Platinum, you don't get guests anymore, right? Unless you spend 75K on the card, which is not something I recommend. Or you could get an authorized user card. It does leave any children you might have that are too young to have an authorized user card. You're going to be on the hook for paying for them per visit. And I have one son and he's 3, and we exclusively use the Chase. I actually, and I'm sure you've done an episode on this, but I changed over to the Ritz-Carlton card. They have unlimited guests, so I don't even think about it at the Chase lounges. But the Reserve still gives you 2 guests, which actually would suit our family just fine. But on the Amex side, I just don't have any interest in paying per. I don't want to think about, like, are we going to be at the lounge long enough to get my money's worth for any additional fee? So they've become our default family lounge. And so that makes having either the Sapphire Reserve or the Ritz-Carlton very worthwhile. I think the 4X points on flights and hotels booked directly, as well as the 3x on dining, keeps this a very powerfully earning card. For, you know, there are a lot of people that even just on a personal card are spending $10,000 plus a month. And so if you're spending on flights and hotels and dining, and you're getting 4X and 4X and 3X booked directly, obviously 8x through the Chase travel portal is great, but I like booking directly. So that's the viewpoint I tend to come at it from. I think a lot of people are still going to do really well on it. And I know you've discussed the card at length before, but, you know, talking about a few of the different things. So they, you know, they have the Edit collection, which for the people that are spending $10,000 a month personally on travel and dining might be staying at these, you know, the Edit tends to be higher end hotels, higher price point, but the kind of thing that I'd kind of probably only stay at using points, and probably you too. But there are people that spend $1,000 a night at hotels, no problem. So you might as well get the benefits of the Edit, get your free breakfast, which at a place like that's probably $100 in value in your upgrade and potentially early check-in, late checkout. But a lot of people don't realize this. It wasn't talked heavily about, but they acquired Valerie Wilson Travel. And so with the Reserve card, you have access to actual, real, high-end, virtuoso travel agents. Totally overlooked by the majority of people, but there are a lot of people that still want a real travel agent to help them out, and to not have to pay for that is pretty nice. I think a lot of people will use that Apple TV credit and the $250 annual credit pretty easily. And then you still have that $300 annual travel credit, and then the $300 dining credit split half year. Look, I'm around the issuers enough to understand their perspective, and then I'm around us to understand our perspective. They have the $120 annual lift credits, but it's $10 a month. I really wish we could just have everything be annual, right? And just whenever I'm going to use it, I use it and I get my value. But clearly that's going to impact breakage on their side. So they do this. But it's not hard, you know, like primetime reservations at the Sapphire Reserve tables on OpenTable, $150 a year. I don't imagine it's hard to use, right? Like I on my Amex Gold, we have the $50 semi-annual resi credit. And so my wife and I both have the Gold card, and we just make a point once every 6 months. I'm like, oh, it's a resi restaurant. So we'll put 50 on yours, 50 on mine. And the credit's done. But the biannual complicates a little bit. Long story short, I really don't think that it's hard to get the $7.95 in value out of the Reserve. I still think it can be a really good daily driver card for people. And, you know, without stepping too far back into Amex Platinum, I think there's a lot of people that get $6.95 out of that in spades without thinking about it. Right. But then at the same time, if somebody is not going to think about using that $300 biannual credit on the dining, you know, probably the only thing that they're going to get super, super easily is the $300 travel credit, which then that would leave you paying $4.95. So, you know, I still think that all of these cards kind of, you got to know yourself. And I do think that now that there's so much choice, it makes it kind of harder for consumers. I think for a while, there was just like, hey, if I want a premium card, I'm going to get an Amex Platinum. End of story. That was the one. And then the Reserve came on the scene, and then a lot of people shifted from Amex Platinum over to Reserve. And then Amex expanded the credits. And then some people, a lot of people, I think, had both. And then as the annual fee rose, I think a lot of people are starting to decide on one or the other at this point.
And that's a great segue, because my next question, when I think about myself, as we were talking offline, I've got, and again, I'm insane in the points and miles world, so for listeners, bear with me here, but I've got personal Amex Platinum and business Amex Platinum. I've got Chase Sapphire Reserve personal that I've had, which is my very first points card ever. I got it when I had the 100,000 point welcome or sign-up bonus. I got it the first month it came out, so I've had that one for the longest time. But then I also just got the Chase Sapphire business card as well, because why not? And I had this the Citi Strata Premier card as well, right? So I've got points in Chase, or I'm in the Chase ecosystem, I'm in the Amex ecosystem, I'm in the Citi ecosystem. I technically have a Capital One business card, and then my fiance has the Venture X. So we are well diversified across all the platforms. And again, I am in the level of super analytical and insanity when it comes to points and miles. Not everyone wants to essentially be in that level. And I recognize that as well, especially someone that's starting out. I have to also very clearly put a disclaimer that you don't have to go that deep, go all in like I do, like I know you do, and many others in this space. But also, we're individuals that we are analytical, and we also create content and blogs and all those type of things in the points and miles space. And we always preach financial responsibility, right? So we're not, just because we have these cards doesn't mean that we're drowning in debt, which is always important to be able to clarify as well. Just because we have cards doesn't mean we necessarily have debt. I say all this to say, when it comes to these different ecosystems, do you find that there is a ecosystem or a card that is better for a certain type of person? And I think we can probably sum up the city you mentioned, especially with the premium card, the Strata Elite, that someone that wants to use the portal to simplify everything, that's a great card for that. But if you round in Amex and Chase and even Capital One at a high level, because I know we could really deep dive into all of these things, what would you say to that?
Well, the first thing I want to say is congrats on all of the diversification of your points. The number one thing that I preach for people that want to up their game from level one, because as we all know, there are certain cards with certain transfer partners, and maybe two cards transfer, but the other one doesn't, right? You might have something that Amex and Capital One transfers to, but Chase doesn't. So it's tough when you're stuck in one system. The way I kind of tend to very high level go at this is that if you are more of a first class flights person, international, Amex has a bit of an edge over the transfer partners from Chase. But if you value hotels, it is still impossible to beat Hyatt as a transfer partner. Although, quick kudos to Citi for, you know, kind of making the best of their situation where they, you know, Hyatt wasn't an option and Hilton is locked up by Amex. By the way, underrated transfer, you know, even with all the devaluations that have occurred at Hilton, at the high end and with the new SLH fold-in, when Amex is doing a transfer bonus of, say, 40% to Hilton, you can actually get really good value out of Amex points at Hilton. And I think it used to be a, you know, don't ever transfer to Hilton kind of thing. But, you know, with a 1-to-2 ratio, and then when there's a transfer bonus of 1 to 2.8, you get your fifth night free on an award, and you don't pay resort fees on an award. I'll just say, look for hidden value there. So it's not like Chase, the only hotel program, but with Hyatt. But Citi has, they onboarded I Prefer. So they already had Choice. Now they have I Prefer. And then they also have the leading hotels of the world. So they've upped their game quite a bit with the hotels. Granted, it's a little bit harder. And at Core also, I believe. So it's harder to extract value out of those because they're not fixed charts like Hyatt. But I still default to Hyatt as the best. And I really hope that they don't untether from the award charts at some point. You know, I'm sure there must be some internal pressure to go dynamic like everyone else has. Although, remember, Hilton, despite being dynamic, does have hidden cap on every hotel. First of all, Hyatt Globalist rocks as a status, really good treatment. You don't have to beg for your 4 p.m. checkout. Your breakfast is generally pretty amazing. But even outside of the status, so you still have tiers, right? You still have an award chart. We're going to stay at the Park Hyatt Vendome this summer, 45,000 points a night. And then we're using a suite upgrade award into a junior suite that I believe is over 2,000 euro a night. And this is one of the things that, you know, I didn't say when we were doing the intro, you know, I started off just wanting to travel more. It didn't last very long. It quickly morphed into, oh my God, I can have the most luxurious travel without paying for it that I would never pay for, but I super enjoy. And so the Park Hyatt Vendome was just kind of like, do I really want to spend 180,000 points on four nights? And I was like, yeah, I do. I want to splurge because that's a super fun thing that I would never pay for. And it's going to make the trip a lot more memorable. And then the other part of Hyatt is, of course, that you can book suites for an incrementally more points. So a standard suite for a little bit more points, or a full suite for double the points. And so for families, I think that's a super attractive option. You don't get that with Hilton. There is no way to book suites with Hilton. I don't even count those premium awards, 2 million points a night. There's no real way to book suites with any other program except Hyatt. So for those reasons, I do think that a hotel person should focus on Chase, but then there's more interesting airline partners from Amex and even Capital One. You know, quick example on the redemption side, and I know we're not going to go into redemptions on this, but if you're trying to go to Asia, the ability to use Cathay Pacific miles to book Japan, you know, it doesn't need to be to Japan, but through Japan or through Hong Kong, because you're going to have both Cathay and JAL become available at the same time. and you can transfer your Amex points there instantly if the availability is there, and you're not going to be able to do that with Chase points. So I really kind of say, like, you really want two programs at a minimum, but if you're choosing one or the other, Amex based on flights or Chase based on Hyatt.
And I completely agree with you there. And going back to when you said that, you know, appreciating that I have a diversified approach, again, taking from just what I even teach and work with clients from a financial planning standpoint, right? It's your investment portfolio must be diversified. You have to be diverse in a lot of different things in life. Now, of course, you can drill all down, but there's a reason why you really won't find any portfolio manager, hedge fund manager, trust fund manager that's all 100% S&P 500, right? There's a reason why there's diversification with investments. And of course, points aren't investments. They actually devalue over time. But from the same standpoint, we want to have a diversified strategy because that can help make the process easier. So Dave, moving on a little bit, one of my questions for you is when someone's building their point strategy and they may be afraid of these higher premium fee cards and adding those, because these are expenses. Yes, you can get value out of them, but they are an expense, and that's got to be factored into your personal budget and your family's budget. And if you are doing more budget travel with your points, having a $700 fee card that you still have to pay that fee. Yes, you get the points out of it, but there is that expense piece. So when, Dave, do you think it makes sense for someone to incorporate a premium card into their strategy or even a second or third premium card in their points growing world?
So, you know, we didn't do a disclaimer, but of course, and I'm sure you do this disclaimer very often. Obviously, if you carry a balance ever, don't get any travel cards, forget this whole thing. Wait until you've paid everything off, get a balance transfer card, pay it down. Know that you're not going to run up a tab because you cannot possibly beat the 20 to 30% APRs on these cards with what you're getting out of travel. So that said, I do think that if you're very budget conscious, if you're redeeming for economy travel, you're not putting a ton of spend on these cards, you probably want to be sticking to one or two of the $95 cards. I mean, you could do very well with a Sapphire Preferred combined with a no fee Freedom Unlimited or Freedom Flex, or both if you want the trifecta, and a City Premier with 3X on so many things. Those both unlock full transfers. Only difference now with Chase would be differential in points boost rates. But other than that, I mean, you get the same transfer partners. It's a math question, and this is why people that work with you get a step ahead. But the math question is, okay, if I'm going to pay the $95 annual fee, which I'm going to do because I want to be able to transfer points, you know, Capital One is the only one that lets you transfer points without having an annual fee card. But then, like, if you get a Venture One, you're only earning 1.25 points per dollar, but you actually have full transfer capabilities. Well, okay, Amex, you could have a no fee Blue Business Plus and transfer. But for the most part, you need one of these $95 annual fee cards. In between you and me, I'm wondering how long they stay $95 with inflation. But I do know that psychologically, going over $100 is tough. So I think we'll kind of see them stay there, and then everybody will explode over at the same time, 125, whatever. The Amex Green is already 150. So I think it's a calculation, right? Like, if you're going to get higher multipliers, how much do you need to spend before you break even on the fee differential?
Right.
And that's kind of like step one. And then, do you travel enough where airport lounge access really matters, right? It's just once a year that you're traveling. Okay, it's cool to have lounge access, but do you really need it? If you do need it and you're on a budget, then probably the Venture X is the way to get that. And even though you're going to come out of pocket $395, if you're doing budget travel, you're fine using the portal. You're going to get your $300 back right away. You know, one way to think about the Venture X is it could be a $95 effective annual fee card with lounge access, right? And then with the 10,000 Modus points, it's actually a free card with lounge access, and it's earning 2X on everything, and it's got points transfers. Where Capital One lacks is strong hotel partners, obviously. So I'm not going to go all in Capital One, but the Venture X might be the only premium card that you get if you're on a budget, because you know that that $395 is being rebated.
And I like the summation of all those different points, because you're right. It really comes down to, A, what type of traveler are you? Does this fit in your budget? And of course, with the disclaimer, that's why we always talk financial responsibility. If you're paying debt, if you have interest, if you're carrying a balance, basically you need to get that eliminated before you even start going down this path. But one of the things that I think as we start to wrap up here is important to talk about is the downgrading component or getting rid of component, because it's great to get the earning and the sign-up bonus for all these cards. But at the same time, most people don't want to have multiple ultra premium cards that they're also paying ultra premium fees on as well. And even myself, I have to have a strategy of, okay, what am I actually going to keep in the long term? Because while in this very moment, I have multiple, like the Chase Business Reserve and the Personal Reserve, I'm likely not keeping all of these cards for years upon years upon years. So my question for you, Dave, is can you talk through for someone that might be a little bit newer, kind of listening to all of this and like, oh my gosh, if I get these different cards and these fees, what's my exit strategy? Because you do want to have an exit plan. What can you say or comment to that when it comes to the personal and the business space? And obviously, those are going to be two different processes with two different ramifications. So let's just first talk personal.
Sure. Okay. So on the personal side, obviously, we never want to close our oldest card. It's just going to impact our credit score. We want to think about our total credit lines. If you have $300,000 in total credit, and then you have a premium card that was at a 40,000K limit, and you drop that off, then your total utilization is going to go up. So that's not ideal. So you might want to think about a downgrade. And so like a Chase Sapphire Reserve, you could downgrade to a no-fee Freedom card, for example, and you'd actually preserve your points. But one thing to always think about before you downgrade a card is, well, two things. One is if you're going to actually close the card, and there are some cards with no downgrade path to a no-fee card, right? Amex Platinum Gold can only go down to green. You can't get into a no-fee product. So if you are going to cancel the card, do a little research online, maybe even drop into a Facebook group and just like double check your math and be like, hey, if I close this card, am I going to keep my points? Do I need to spend my points first? In nearly every case, there's a way to avoid having to speculatively transfer, which I really never advise people do, with very few exceptions, because that program might completely change by the time you're going to use your points. So for example, the Chase, you have the downgrade path into the Freedoms. Capital One, Venture X can go down into a Venture One, which has no annual fee. And even with Citi, you can downgrade into no annual fee cards without losing your thank you points, although you will lose the ability to do the one-to-one transfers. With Chase, if you only have a no annual fee card again, you won't be able to transfer to transfer partners. Amex, they no longer have the sort of membership rewards light or whatever it was called many, many, many years ago. So if you have points, they're transferable. But just to always make sure that if you're closing, you might need to transfer the points to another card. Like if you had a reserve and you weren't going to downgrade it for whatever reason, you would need to physically transfer those points to another Chase card or out to a transfer partner before you close it, or you will lose the points. But most cases, the downgrades will preserve the points, even if not the utility of the points. And sometimes a strategy for people, which I don't see any problem with, is sometimes you might say, like, I have no short-term travel plans. And I don't even have medium, like, I don't think I'm traveling for 3-4 years for whatever reason, life things. So you might take your reserve and downgrade that to a Freedom Unlimited, still get your 3x on dining, whatever, not pay any annual fees, not sweat it. And then in 3 years, you could just upgrade that back to a preferred or a reserve and then transfer your points out. Like, they're safe, right? It does depend on by issuer. And I think that if you're on the more beginner side of things, do your research, but then double check. Like, double check in a Facebook group or whatever community and just be like, hey, I'm planning to do X, Y, and Z. Can somebody just confirm that I'm not going to lose my points?
And then how would you answer the same question, but on the business side?
It's actually very similar on the business side with the exception of the credit, right? Because with a few exceptions, like the Capital One Spark Miles or the Capital One Spark Cash, but not the Spark Cash Plus or VentureX Business, you know, those two cards, the first two report to your personal credit. So those will impact your personal credit. Other than that, pretty much any mainstream business credit card does not report to your personal credit, and therefore closing one will not have any effect on your personal credit score. You have the hard inquiry when you're opening it, but closing it doesn't have any impact. But downgrades can be pretty similar. Like, you could have a Chase Inc. Preferred with the $95 annual fee. You could downgrade it to an Inc. Cash or an Inc. Unlimited. That would preserve your points, but not the ability to transfer. On the Amex side, if you downgraded, like, you could have know, if you had a Business Platinum, you could downgrade it all the way to an Amex Green if you didn't want to cancel it, if you didn't have any other way to preserve the points. But if you had, say, no fee Blue Business Plus, then you could just go ahead and cancel it. You and I did talk a little bit before the show about, you know, if you've opened Amex cards because they lured you in with big offers, should you feel a need to keep them? And so touch on that for a second. Yeah, Amex definitely does measure your profitability with them. So if you've taken on a bunch of targeted bonus offers and then you close all those cards after 1 year and you didn't really spend on those cards, you can probably expect you're not going to get those offers for a while. You could wind up in pop-up jail. But I do think that if you're spending on other Amex cards, like if you have a Blue Business Plus you spend heavily on and you close the business goal, I don't necessarily think you're going to wind up in pop-up jail. But if you opened a handful of them and you close all of them right at the 1 year mark, you might. And then eventually from continued spend, I think you'd come out of it. A little bit of a tangent there. But I don't think business is too much different, except that I think that it's a little bit easier to close a card versus downgrade because you don't have to worry about impact on credit.
Got it. Well, Dave, we've covered a lot of great information today. This has been fantastic. It's been not a super deep dive, but fairly deep dive into the world of ultra premium cards. My question for you before we wrap this one up, for you specifically, if you could only keep one of these ultra premium cards, and assuming that all the perks are what they are currently in perpetuity, and you can only have one, which would it be and why?
So I think right now I would probably stick with Venture X, even though that's not ultra premium. It's like mid premium at $395, because I like the Capital One lounges. I think that even paying the, I think it's $125 or $145 for an authorized user would do it. Yeah, you know, it's almost an unfair question for me because of the fact that I've got these other cards that make it so I don't need to choose like that, right? Like I have my Ritz-Carlton cards for my lounge access. I still have a City Prestige, which gets me airport dining. I've got the Venture X. I don't currently have the Chase Sapphire Reserve, but, and I did have it. If I was going to do a true spending card, if I literally didn't have any of these other options, and I wanted to be earning points most efficiently, I think I would go for the Chase Sapphire Reserve, because I do think that the credits are easy enough to use. And I do think that the 4X, 4X, 3X is a solid value proposition. So I think I would go one of those two routes.
Awesome. I love that. I love how we brought everything back around and your personal touch added into all that as well.
I can't help it.
Perfect, Dave. Well, where can listeners follow your journey, learn more about Miles Talk, all that fun stuff?
The blog is at milestalk.com. We also have a really awesome credit card finder engine where you put in your spend and it'll tell you which cards will earn you the most. And you can sort by features and benefits and all that at yourbestcreditcards.com. Again, as of today, we've got about 47,000 members in a Miles Talk Facebook group. So we'd love to see you there. And then I am at Miles Talk on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads.
Perfect. Well, last two questions I've got for you, Dave. The first one, you've brought a lot of value to this show. Who comes to mind that you think we should also have on the show? I forgot to mention that I was connected with you from the previous episode a couple weeks ago with Ross Alcorn with Itinerary Boss. He got us connected and he was right. You were a world of knowledge and super excited that you were able to come on today. Who else do you think would make a great guest for a future episode?
Honestly, if you could grab one of the frequent milers, I think they'd be great guests. I can make an introduction if you haven't.
So we're in the same podcast network, Voyescape, together. And so Greg was going to be coming on to a future episode. It's not been recorded yet, but we are going to have him on a future episode. We've already worked that out. They just are dealing with all their team challenges and all that stuff right now. So it's probably going to be in the fall.
And when you wait long enough, grab Nick.
Got it.
You know, they both have the same overall heads, but very different approaches, I think. And they're both super nice, cool guys. Honestly, those are my two default recommendations. Also, like, just really... really both stand-up ethical guys.
Perfect. Well, we're already getting one on the show. We'll work to get another one on a future episode as well. Dave, any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
Not really. I think we covered a lot on this, and I know that our original goal is really just the super premium cards, but I think we dove pretty well into, you know, entire ecosystems and mid-tier cards and everything. So, I mean, I would just say, you know, no debt, stay diversified.
Sounds like a true financial advisor yourself. Well, Dave, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been fantastic having you on as a guest, and thank you for sharing so much knowledge with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For listeners out there, if you enjoyed this episode today, as always, be sure to follow us on all social media channels, whether it's on Instagram, whether it's YouTube for the show or YouTube for our blogs. Sign up for our newsletter. Links to all of that are in the show notes, as well as the links to our Facebook group as well. Connect with Dave, connect with Miles Talk. The guy's a wealth of knowledge, always putting out great content out there and has some great tools to help you learn how to revolutionize your travels as well. Dave, again, thanks for being someone who's helping many people revolutionize their journeys, their travels through points and miles and other things. And as always, for everyone, if you enjoyed the episode, love the content, don't forget to like, share, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review, tell your friends. And as always, we will catch you in the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Travel doesn't just happen when you get on a plane. I'm Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore not just where to go, but how to bring travel into your everyday life through books, shows, and stories that shift your perspective, plus insights on smart destinations, timely trends, and interviews with the people shaping the way we explore. Find us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or voyescape.com.